Then he had a nice little breakfast in the kitchen before turning out the dining room. By that time the sun was shining, and the front door was open, letting in a warm spring breeze. Bilbo began to whistle loudly and to forget about the night before. In fact, he was just sitting down to a nice little second breakfast in the dining room by the open window, when in walked Gandalf.
"My dear fellow," he said, "whenever are you going to come? What about an early start? And here you are having breakfast, or whatever you call it, at 10:30. They left you the message because they couldn't wait."
"What message?" said poor Mr. Baggins, all in a fluster.
"Great elephants," said Gandalf. "You're not at all yourself this morning. You've never dusted the mantelpiece."
"What's that got to do with it? I've had enough to do with washing up for 14.
"If you'd dusted the mantelpiece, you'd have found this just under the clock," said Gandalf, handing Bilbo a note, written, of course, on his own notepaper. This is what he read. "Foreign and Company to Burglar Bilbo Greeting. For your hospitality, our sincerest thanks, and for your offer of professional assistance, our grateful acceptance. Terms, cash on delivery, up to and not exceeding 1/14 of total profits, if any. All travelling expenses guaranteed in any event. Funeral expenses to be defrayed by us or our representatives if occasion arises and the matter is not otherwise arranged for. Thinking it unnecessary to disturb your esteemed repose, we have proceeded in advance to make requisite preparations, and shall await your respected person at the Green Dragon Inn, Bywater, at 11 a.m. sharp. Trusting that you will be punctual, we have the honour to remain, yours deeply, Thorin and Company." "That leaves you just 10 minutes. You'll have to run," said Gandalf.
"But," said Bilbo.
"No time for it," said the wizard.
"But," said Bilbo again.
"No time for that either. Off you go."
To the end of his days, Bilbo could never remember how he found himself outside, without a hat, walking stick, or any money, or anything that he usually took when he went out, leaving his second breakfast half-finished and quite unwashed up, pushing his keys into Gandalf's hands, and running as fast as his furry feet could carry him across the lane, past the great mill, across the water, and then on for a whole mile or more. Very puffed he was when he got to Bywater, just on the stroke of 11, and found he had come without a pocket-handkerchief.
"Bravo!" said Balin, who was standing at the inn-door looking out for him.
Just then all the others came round the corner of the road from the village. They were on ponies, and each pony was slung about with all kinds of baggages, packages, parcels, and paraphernalia. There was a very small pony, apparently for Bilbo.
"Up you two get, and off we go," said Thorin.
"I'm awfully sorry," said Bilbo, "but I've come without my hat, and I've left my pocket-handkerchief behind, and I haven't got any money. I didn't get your note until after 10:45, to be precise."
"Don't be precise," said Dwalin, "and don't worry. You'll have to manage without pocket-handkerchiefs and a good many other things before you get to the journey's end. As for a hat, I've got a spare hood and cloak in my luggage."
That's how they all came to start, jogging off from the inn one fine morning just before May, on laden ponies, and Bilbo was wearing a dark green hood, a little weather-stained, and a dark green cloak borrowed from Dwalin. They were too large for him, and he looked rather comic. What his father, Bungo, would have thought of him, I daren't think. His only comfort was he couldn't be mistaken for a dwarf, as he'd no beard. They had not been riding very long when up came Gandalf, very splendid, on a white horse. He had brought a lot of pocket-handkerchiefs and Bilbo's pipe and tobacco. So after that the party went along very merrily, and they told stories or sang songs as they rode forward all day, except, of course, when they stopped for meals. These didn't come quite as often as Bilbo would have liked them, but still he began to feel that adventures were not so bad after all. At first they had passed through Hobbitlands, a wild, respectable country inhabited by decent folk, with good roads, an inn or two, and now and then a dwarf or a farmer ambling by on business. Then they came to lands where people spoke strangely, and sang songs Bilbo had never heard before. Now they had gone on far into the Lone Lands, where there were no people left, no inns, and the roads grew steadily worse. Not far ahead were dreary hills, rising higher and higher, dark with trees. On some of them were old castles with an evil look, as if they had been built by wicked people. Everything seemed gloomy, for the weather that day had taken a nasty turn. Mostly it had been as good as May can be, even in merry tales, but now it was cold and wet. In the Lone Lands they had to camp when they could, but at least it had been dry. "To think it will soon be June," grumbled Bilbo as he splashed along behind the others in a very muddy track. It was after tea time. It was pouring with rain, and had been all day. His hood was dripping into his eyes, his cloak was full of water, the pony was tired and stumbled on stones, the others were too grumpy to talk. "And I'm sure the rain has got into the dry clothes and into the food bags," thought Bilbo. "Bother burgling and everything to do with it. I wish I was at home in my nice hole by the fire with the kettle just beginning to sing." It was not the last time that he wished that. Still the dwarves jogged on, never turning round or taking any notice of the hobbit. Somewhere behind the grey clouds the sun must have gone down, for it began to get dark. Wind got up, and the willows along the river bank bent and sighed. I don't know what river it was, a rushing red one, swollen with the rains of the last few days that came down from the hills and mountains in front of them. Soon it was nearly dark. The winds broke up the grey clouds, and a waning moon appeared above the hills between the flying rags. Then they stopped, and Thorin muttered something about supper.
"And where shall we get a dry patch to sleep on?"
Not until then did they notice that Gandalf was missing. So far he'd come all the way with them, never saying if he was in the adventure or merely keeping them company for a while. He had eaten most, talked most, and laughed most, but now he simply was not there at all.
"Just when a wizard would have been most useful, too," groaned Dori and Nori, who shared the hobbit's views about regular meals, plenty and often.
They decided in the end that they would have to camp where they were. So far they had not camped before on this journey, and though they knew that they soon would have to camp regularly, when they were among the misty mountains and far from the lands of respectable people, it seemed a bad wet evening to begin on. They moved to a clump of trees, and though it was drier under them, the wind shook the rain off the leaves, and the drip, drip was most annoying. Also the mischief seemed to have got into the fire. Dwarves can make a fire almost anywhere out of almost anything, wind or no wind. But they could not do it that night, not even Oin and Gloin, who were specially good at it. Then one of the ponies took fright at nothing and bolted. He got into the river before they could catch him, and before they could get him out again, Feely and Keely were nearly drowned, and all the baggage that he carried was washed away off him. Of course it was mostly food, and there was mighty little left for supper and less for breakfast. There they all sat glum and wet and muttering, while Oin and Gloin went on trying to light the fire, and quarrelling about it. Bilbo was sadly reflecting that adventures are not all pony rides in May sunshine, when Balin, who was always their lookout man, said,
"There's a light over there."
There was a hill some way off with trees on it, pretty thick in parts. Out of the dark mass of the trees they could now see a light shining, a reddish, comfortable-looking light, as if it might be a fire or torches twinkling. When they had looked at it for some time, they fell to arguing. Some said no, and some said yes. Some said they could but go and see, and anything was better than little supper, less breakfast, and wet clothes all the night. Others said,
"These parts are none too well known, and are too near the mountains. Travellers seldom come this way now. The old maps are no use. Things have changed for the worse, and the road is unguarded. They have seldom ever heard of the king around here, and the less inquisitive you are as you go along, the less trouble you're likely to find." Some said, "After all, there are 14 of us." Others said, "Where's Gandalf got to?" This remark was repeated by everybody. Then the rain began to pour down worse than ever, and Oin and Gloin began to fight. That settled it.
"After all, we have got a burglar with us," they said,
and so they made off, leading their ponies, with all due and proper caution, in the direction of the light. They came to the hill and were soon in the wood. Up the hill they went, but there was no proper path to be seen, such as might lead to a house or a farm, and do what they could they made a deal of rustling and crackling and creaking, and a good deal of grumbling and dratting, as they went through the trees in the pitch dark. Suddenly the red light shone out very bright through the tree trunks not far ahead.
"Now it is the burglar's turn," they said, meaning Bilbo. "You must go on and find out all about the light, and what it's for, and if all is perfectly safe and canny," said Thorin to the hobbit. "Now scuttle off, and come back quick if all is well. If not, come back if you can. If you can't, hoot twice like a barn owl and once like a screech owl, and we'll do what we can."
Off Bilbo had to go, before he could explain that he could not hoot even once like any kind of owl any more than fly like a bat. But at any rate, hobbits can move quietly in woods, absolutely quietly. They take a pride in it, and Bilbo had sniffed more than once at what he called all this dwarvish racket as they went along, though I don't suppose you or I would notice anything at all on a windy night, not if the whole cavalcade had passed 2 feet off. As for Bilbo walking primly towards the red light, I don't suppose even a weasel would have stirred a whisker at it. So, naturally, he got right up to the fire, for fire it was, without disturbing anyone. And this is what he saw. 3 very large persons sitting round a very large fire of beech logs. They were toasting mutton on long spits of wood, and licking the gravy off their fingers. There was a fine, toothsome smell. Also, there was a barrel of good drink at hand, and they were drinking out of jugs. But they were trolls. Obviously trolls. Even Bilbo, in spite of his sheltered life, could see that. From the great, heavy faces of them, and their size, and the shape of their legs, not to mention their language, which was not drawing-room fashion at all.
"Mutton yesterday, mutton today, and blimey, if it don't look like mutton again tomorrow," said one of the trolls.
"Never a blinking bit of man flesh if we had for long enough," said a second.
"What the hell William was a-thinking of to bring us into these parts at all beats me, and the drink running short what's more,"
he said, jogging the elbow of William, who was taking a pull at his jug. William choked.
"Such a mouth," he said as soon as he could. "You can't expect folk to stop here forever just to be hit by you and Bert. You've hit a village and a half between you since we come down from the mountains. How much more do you want? And time's been up our way when you'd have said, 'Thank you, Bill, for a nice bit of fat valley mutton like what this is.'"
He took a big bite off a sheep's leg he was toasting and wiped his lips on his sleeve. "Yes, I am afraid trolls do behave like that, even those with only one head each. After hearing all this, Bilbo ought to have done something at once. Either he should have gone back quietly and warned his friends that there were three fair-sized trolls at hand in a nasty mood, quite likely to try Toasted Dwarf, or even Pony, for a change, or else he should have done a bit of good, quick burgling. A really first-class and legendary burglar would at this point have picked the troll's pockets. It is nearly always worthwhile, if you can manage it. Pinched the very mutton off the spits, purloined the beer, and walked off without their noticing him. Others, more practical, but with less professional pride, would perhaps have stuck a dagger into each of them before they observed it. Then the night could have been spent cheerily. Bilbo knew it. He had read a good many things he had never seen or done. He was very much alarmed as well as disgusted. He wished himself 100 miles away, and yet somehow he could not go straight back to Thorin and Company empty-handed. So he stood and hesitated in the shadows. Of the various burglarious proceedings he had heard of, picking the troll's pockets seemed the least difficult. So at last he crept behind a tree just behind William. Bert and Tom went off to the barrel. William was having another drink. Then Bilbo plucked up courage and put his little hand in William's enormous pocket. There was a purse in it, as big as a bag to Bilbo. "Ha!" thought he, warming to his new work as he lifted it carefully out. "This is a beginning." It was. Trolls' purses are the mischief, and this was no exception.
"Here, who are you?"
it squeaked as it left the pocket, and William turned round at once and grabbed Bilbo by the neck before he could duck behind the tree.
"Blimey, Bert, look what I've copped," said William. "What is it?" said the others, coming up. "Lummy, if I knows. What are you?"
"Bilbo Baggins, a hobbit," said poor Bilbo, shaking all over, and wondering how to make owl noises before they throttled him.
"A burr a hobbit?"
said they, a bit startled. Trolls are slow in the uptake, and mighty suspicious about anything new to them.
"What's a burr a hobbit got to do with my pocket anyways?" said William. "And can you cook 'em?" said Tom.
"You can try," said Bert, picking up a skewer.
"He wouldn't make above a mouthful," said William, who had already had a fine supper. "Not when he was skinned and boned."
"Perhaps there are more like him round about, and we might make a pie," said Bert.
"Here, you! Are there any more of your sort of sneaking in these here woods, you nasty little rabbit?"
said he, looking at the hobbit's furry feet. And he picked him up by the toes and shook him.
"Yes, lots," said Bilbo, before he remembered not to give his friends away. "None at all, not one," he said immediately afterwards.
"What do you mean?" said Bert,
holding him right way up, by the hair this time. "What I say," said Bilbo, gasping. "And please don't cook me, kind sirs. I'm a good cook myself, and cook better than I cook, if you see what I mean. I'll cook beautifully for you, a perfectly beautiful breakfast for you, if only you won't have me for supper."
"Poor little blighter," said William.
He had already had as much supper as he could hold. Also, he had had lots of beer.
"Poor little blighter, let him go."
"Not till he says what he means by lots and none at all," said Bert. "I don't want to have me throat cut in me sleep. Hold his toes in the fire till he talks."
"I won't have it," said William. "I caught him anyway."
"You're a fat fool, William," said Bert, "as I've said afore this evening."
"And you're a lout."
"And I won't take that from you, Bill Huggins," said Bert,
and put his fist in William's eye. Then there was a gorgeous row. Bilbo had just enough wits left, when Bert dropped him on the ground, to scramble out of the way of their feet before they were fighting like dogs and calling one another all sorts of perfectly true and applicable names in very loud voices. Soon they were locked in one another's arms and rolling nearly into the fire, kicking and thumping, while Tom whacked at them both with a branch to bring them to their senses, and that, of course, only made them madder than ever. That would have been the time for Bilbo to have left, but his poor little feet had been very squashed in Bert's big paw, and he had no breath in his body, and his head was going round, so there he lay for a while, panting, just outside the circle of firelight.